You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes!
That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Down with
the king for years, about 10 of them. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. its longest running weekend episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime from the other side of the country. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Marcus. I understand it's hard to be faithful in a marriage, but cheating is always a Graves mistake.
I was wondering where you're going here.
Long way to go for that joke, but I think we landed there. I think we landed it.
I was like, you trying to tell me something? I mean, all right.
This turned into a Tyler Perry special all of a sudden.
I know.
And it always is those light-skinned dudes that's doing their women's wrong.
Come on. My eyes aren't pretty enough to be involved in this.
You say you're not
Michael Ealy.
Yeah, Michael Ealy. Yeah, yeah.
That's the main one.
Stay doing them women wrong.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing this week, brother?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good, man. You know, had a crazy week both on and off the field of play. We got some interesting stories to talk about. We're going to touch on, of course, the Colin Kaepernick news that came out the past week. We've got some news and notes to hit on from the NBA All-Star Weekend down in Charlotte. And we got a bunch of wrestling to talk about this week, as last night was the Elimination Chamber. And yes. we are fully on that road to WrestleMania now, brother.
Choo-choo. we will start with some wrestling, since you are not watching Raw.
You see, I got my brand right here. This is who I'm repping.
What kind of demonic steam shirt is that?
It's the TNA Joker's thing.
Oh, what is
that? That's Jermaine Jones.
Finer moments.
Actually, Brother Jermaine sent it to me.
Oh, wow.
It was, I think it was like a sting pack from TNA. I think it was right after he left.
Okay.
I had to go to WWE, and it was like, I got the shirt, I got a sting mask, and I got like the Sting bandana,
mm-hmm.
and actually, I think it might have been the Aces and Eights bandana, and Sting DVD, like the TNA Sting, like the retrospective of everything he did in TNA.
Okay.
And Jermaine got that for me for one, I think it was a Christmas one year, a birthday present. So, shout out to Brother Jermaine, who I think
Jermaine.
Spent the week in your neck of the woods in Disney.
I think he was at Disney World. He was in Orlando.
I mean, it's not like, you know, you have a dual citizenship.
I do.
Disneyland and Disney World.
I'm going back to Florida next week to reclaim my citizenship of Disney World. So I'll be back on Saturday for a stretch.
Okay.
But yes, the start of Monday Night Raw tonight, as you mentioned, off the chamber. Our friend Uncle Paul came out. And he had some announcements to make, including four new superstars that are making their debut tonight, Nate.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
Would you like to take a guess at these people?
Would you say that these four new superstars are so good that their worth can't be disputed?
What's the reference?
The Undisputed Era.
Oh, no, not them.
Not them. Okay, so is it somebody from NXT or is it somebody from outside the company?
It's NXT. Mm-hmm.
Four new superstars.
Yep.
Do they have anything in common with each other besides NXT?
Two of them do.
Do those two that have something in common have anything to do with the month we're still in?
No, I wish it was the Street Profits, but not yet. No. No, they're both champions, actually, which is even more puzzling.
Oh, okay. So is Shayna one of them?
No.
Not Shayna.
Not Shayna.
Okay. So then I guess we're talking Gargano?
Yep.
Wow. So Gargano, he just brought Gargano up the night after Elimination Chamber with no backstory.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Is Black the other one? Aleister Black.
Yep. He's up. Two more.
Wow. Okay, so we got Gargano, we got Black, it's not Shayna. So then I guess what are the new tag champs?
They're not a tag team. No, it's not War Machine or War Raiders or whoever.
That's what I was thinking. It's not the War Raiders.
Two more single wrestlers.
Oh, okay. Pete Dunne?
Nope.
Not Pete Dunne.
Not Pete Dunne.
Mm.
The people at home are just yelling at you on your phone now.
Ricochet.
Ricochet's up.
Oh, Ricochet's up. Wow.
And this last one's a real just what the fuck moment.
It's not Ciampa, is it?
It's Ciampa.
Wow. With no build. So how do you bring him up?
He's going, basically discussing, Road to WrestleMania, blah, blah, blah. And he said, in addition to my roles here, I'm also sort of in charge of NXT. And
so this is like the first time we're acknowledging.
Breaking down NXT that wall. Yes. And he said, there are four superstars that will be making their debut tonight. And they cut to these video packages that Michael Cole was narrating over to make them sound like total dweebs. Just like, I don't think Michael Cole is the right person to really sell you on a Johnny Gargano or a Tommaso Ciampa. I would have liked to see them do sort of the same video patches, but with like maybe Moro sort of talking about them.
Yeah.
Instead of having Cole doing it live on air, but not sure how they're going to be introduced tonight in terms of what their role is, if they're going to have a match between, I guess, what, Black and Ricochet versus DIY. I don't know how that's going to play out, but...
Yeah, it's like you barely got... Well, not even barely. Like, you haven't gotten over the last group of NXT guys you brought up.
Yeah.
With EC3 and Heavy Machinery and Lacey and Nikki Cross. Like, you haven't gotten any of those guys over. But we're going to bring up four more people.
Four more people. Two more champions. I guess I didn't do double duty between now and Mania until TakeOver. But unless this is just setting up for some type of Nexus, like
NXT invasion.
Yeah, but you would think you would do that with Undisputed Era. You wouldn't do that with Ricochet and Aleister Black. All very odd.
Yeah,
and they're all on Raw. It seems like I don't know what SmackDown gets.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing. Like, the other four people he brought up are still quote unquote free agents.
Yes, those are still free agents.
They haven't been assigned to a particular show.
You know, if this is all because you're trying to shop NXT to FS1, then I guess it made sense to introduce the mainstream audience to some of the talent down there. Maybe there's a deeper meaning behind this, but on the surface, this all seems very confusing and adds to a crowded roster.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, I mean, obviously those are all good performers, but we barely have enough storylines for the people that are on the roster full time anyway. And so, especially now when we're coming up to WrestleMania, like, I could see if this was the night after Mania,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that we've only got one more show in between now and WrestleMania, it feels like the wrong time to bring these people up. But you know, who am I to question your dear friend Paul?
That is true. We did not hold the pencil. We do not know how these things work in terms of booking. So I defer to Mr. Levesque.
Let's stick with wrestling then, Marcus, since you broached the topic. Last night was the Elimination Chamber. I watched some of it. I watched like the key matches after the fact, because I was watching, you know, I was doing my due diligence as a proud, strong black man. I was watching the NBA All-Star Game. And so then after that, I went back to the network and watched Elimination Chamber after I kind of saw the response to the show.
Mm-hmm.
So we got that to talk about. We've also, you know, I don't know if you want to talk into about the off-the-field stuff, so to speak, with Jimmy Uso, as well as your man Corey Graves out here on these streets.
We can touch on that.
That's his problem. He shouldn't have touched on something that wasn't his.
Allegedly.
But yeah, so Corey Graves, I guess it came out through his wife.
Yes.
very, very vocally on her Instagram that allegedly Corey was having or is having an affair with Carmella.
Yes.
Who is their kid's favorite wrestler, apparently. And Corey's wife, taking pettiness to a whole nother level, tagged Corey on the Instagram post and then tagged Carmella right over the kids. What say you, Marcus Vandenberg?
How are you doing?
Damn.
Unfortunate. It was slightly awkward during the broadcast last night because the first two wrestlers that came out were Naomi.
Yep.
Who was in her own trouble this week. And then Carmella.
Off-field type of incident.
And for the longest, Corey Graves was pretty quiet when Carmella was making her way to the ring. And then he finally chimed in. But, yeah.
To be fair, though, it's like it's not a whole lot he could say that wouldn't get him in even more trouble. Like, oh, I love Carmella's entrance.
Yeah.
Boy, just I love her moves.
Yeah.
He couldn't go through the whole Mandy Rose stick that he does with Carmella. It wouldn't be appropriate.
No. He did go through the whole Mandy Rose thing, which I thought was funny, considering the situation he's in at the moment, allegedly.
Yes.
But, you know, I will say it's got to be hard for the employees of WWE to maintain a marriage and a family when you're dealing with people who are outside the company. And I'm not excusing what
it's
Corey...
hard enough when you got two people on the active roster that are in a relationship, let alone somebody that you would guess is at home raising the kids 80% of the time without the other person.
By the way, Gargano and Ciampa are teaming up tonight against the Revival.
Mm. Who knows? Maybe, and I finally flipped it over to Raw, and Paul Heyman's on the screen.
Oh.
Maybe,
hey, Paul.
Maybe your other buddy over here. Maybe he leads these NXT people.
Yeah.
And we get a moment like that, a moment during the invasion, one of the only good moments of the invasion where you had the ECW guys turn around in the ring.
Uh-oh, Paul. Don't get hurt, Paul. We're talking about Corey Graves, huh?
Yeah, Corey. Your man's Corey Graves.
Yeah. So, I know, it's not an excuse for what he did, but...
No.
It's time to be difficult.
Neither one of them. Like, if this is true, he's in the wrong and she's in the wrong for knowing that the dude is married and messing with him.
Yeah. And I think this is why you see so many wrestling relationships, because it's just, you know, it's a lot easier to maintain one.
to be fair, there are a couple sites that are saying that the couple was separated and they were having some issues, but they weren't divorced yet. Not to say that still doesn't make it right.
Okay.
For Corey to do what he did, but if they are separated, then that's a little bit different situation.
And this is not the first time, allegedly, that a marriage has sort of been disrupted by another wrestler. You can search around. I'll let you find out who did what. But that's not the first time it's happened, and a lawsuit might have come up.
Watching the video version on the Kings of Sport Patreon, I'm not going to say any names because I don't want to put nobody's personal business out there. But let's just say I was looking for some other examples of marriages that didn't work because the wrestler was being unfaithful, and let's just say I couldn't see it.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about
that one. I remember that one.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. I was thinking about
there's a couple.
There's a more recent one where a guy is currently disappeared and. Yeah. So is the other person. So,
yeah. Maybe it's just the curse of, what was the name of their team? Was it just Enzo and Big Cass? That was all their name? They didn't have, like, a name?
What was their name? Yeah, I don't think they had a name.
So, yeah, Cass is gone, Enzo's gone, and now Carmella might be a homewrecker, allegedly.
Allegedly, so. but that's enough on that topic. As for Naomi and is it Jimmy?
Yeah, I believe it's Jimmy. Jonathan is his real name.
Yeah. I heard what you said on John Away on the Chapter Hangout last Thursday when they sort of broke the news to you. And as you mentioned, you know, I think black men definitely get it harder from the police than others, and I don't know the full details behind, like, I don't know what they define as squaring up, you know.
And it's again, not to make this bigger than it actually ended up being, but, like, Philando Castile was shot complying with the police. And my man Jimmy Uso out here, allegedly with his shirt off, squaring up with the cops. Like, come on, man. Like, you gotta be smarter than that.
Yeah, but at the same time, they got to be smarter about drinking and driving.
That's the starting point for the whole thing. Like, why? Yeah. I don't know why any celebrity, really, like, let alone wrestler, why any celebrity in 2019 is out here drinking and driving when you got money, man. Call an Uber, get a Lyft.
Yeah,
like if you want to drink, fine, you know. But you putting yourself in that, because wasn't it Naomi? The reason they stopped them in the first place, she was driving the wrong way on a one-way street. Yeah, like that could have ended badly in a number of different ways.
I mean, this isn't the first Uso incident. Jay was involved in something last year.
Yep.
This isn't by any means the first wrestling DUI incident. It's almost like the company needs to just have, like, a corporate Uber account for these guys. That
would be smart.
Like, after midnight, we will pay for your Uber rides to get to and from your hotel if you're going out. Because, ultimately, this just looks bad on the company. And the company was pretty dismissive, I would say, of the arrest. Basically saying he's in charge of his personal life. And, look, they won the titles. It didn't really...
He had to learn the consequences of his actions, and he won the title. So there was a lesson taught.
Yeah. So I think they treat DUIs a little differently than, I would say, other crimes, which, I mean, not to say DUIs aren't important, because they are, but I guess when you sort of weigh it into the bigger picture, like, it's, you know, a lot of it too is like, we need to see how this plays out in the court system.
Yeah, and that's the other thing with DUIs, though. It's like, sometimes they're just the person that's drunk and belligerent, and they get caught and arrested or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, what could have happened is the because it's like, they're very fortunate that this is all that happened. Because, like we said, him being belligerent with the cops could have ended real bad. Her going, like, we don't know, again, we don't know how fast she was going on the one-way street. Like, that could have ended bad. And so, like, these are two people, three, if you count Jay, that, you know, I'm a fan of, and I know you're probably a fan of, too. But it's like, yeah, you don't want to ruin your whole career and maybe your whole life off of one night of being stupid.
Yeah. So, as for the actual pay-per-view, I'm assuming you saw the women's match.
Did you watch the entire thing start to finish?
I did not watch the tag team match. I did not watch Balor and Lashley. And I think that was the only two matches I didn't go back and watch. But okay, I watched both chambers.
I watched both chamber matches. I watched Shane and Miz versus the Usos. And then I watched the angle with Ronda and Becky and Charlotte.
Yeah. I think overall the show was pretty good. I thought the women's match over-delivered. I know there was a lot of critics who were sort of ready to shit on the match before it even happened.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is fair to the women. You know, to be honest, like, when you have a match on a pay-per-view, it's pretty rare you see a match that is just flat-out awful. It's been a while. I think
the women now they're very careful with the women most of the time. Like, they're not gonna put them out there like they used to do back in the day, where they could fall on their face.
Yeah, I think they've come a long way, and I think the women personally take it very seriously, and it's very personal to them. I know I talked to Mandy Rose last week before the chamber, and she sort of talked about her experience in the first chamber match and going into this match, and. Not only are they sort of excited about the whole thing, but they're also, you know, I think that's important to them. They know what the importance of being in a first ever match for the women. So
yeah, friend of the program and Patreon member Steve Willey commented on that when he saw that article come out. He's like, Marcus is out here rubbing shoulders with the big wigs, and he's not sharing any of the bounty with the lovely and talented Mandy Rose out here on these streets.
Simply a phone interview, guys. Simply a phone interview.
It wasn't that time Charlotte came by Yahoo.
No, it was not. It was not. I did not have lunch with Mandy Rose. I had lunch with Charlotte.
I was going to ask you, like, when she walked into the cafeteria, did everything start going in slow motion?
You know what? No one recognized her.
Really?
Which was, I thought for sure, just because, I mean, look, she's tall. She just naturally stands out in the room. And nobody recognized her. And I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. Like, she was just sitting there like she was any other employee at Yahoo, just eating a salad. And just, you know, we were talking about women's wrestling. And
I mean, I guess technically in California, like, a tall blonde is less likely to stand out than, no shade to our people in the Midwest. But, like, if this was Sheboygan.
Yeah.
If she walked down the street in Sheboygan, then that's different.
Yeah. So, but no, it was just a phone interview. But I thought the women's match was good.
Yeah. There's a pretty unique spots in there that I enjoyed.
I was surprised to see. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I thought it came together really nicely. The finish actually did kind of surprise me a bit because I thought maybe they were going to put the belts on Nia and Tamina just to, so we could have a little chase to WrestleMania. But I mean, this whole division was basically just kind of built for Bayley and Sasha. So it didn't shock me that they won the belts.
It didn't shock me, but I was sort of confused by the story leading up to the match where it felt like Bayley was carrying the team.
Yeah.
And I guess in the end, Sasha carried Bayley. So maybe that's the conclusion to the story, but it felt like there's a hole there in that storyline. And, you know, the other thing too is, like, after the match, you know, when they're celebrating and Sasha's talking, whenever Sasha talks now, I just feel like she's that close to doing a heel turn. Like, she's just any minute now to just flip and attack Bayley. Mm. And I don't know if that's her delivery or if that's because that's her personality in the ring, but
right.
I do not think babyface when I see Sasha Banks.
No, and she's much better as a heel anyway. So I think eventually we'll get there. Probably not right now. What I'd like to see, though, and I kind of talked about it a bit on the Cafe Hangout last week with John and Wei, is I want to see Kairi Sane and Io Shirai up in the division, because I think they could do some really cool things.
The Sky Pirates. Yeah, I thought they might be the last team in the match.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they could definitely give Sasha and Bayley a run. And I don't know where they go for Mania. I don't know if it's Nia and Tamina, if it's
they'll probably do like a multi-woman tag team thingy.
Yeah, I mean, just to get the belts on the card. Yeah, I wouldn't mind just a straight tag team match.
I thought you'd be advocating for your new best friend Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville.
Well, I would say we just saw a sits woman tag, basically, that I don't know if there's room for another one.
The only thing I'm thinking, the only reason I think they might do a multi is just because they want to get as many people as they can on the card.
Yeah.
So
that is true.
I mean, they've only got so much time for WrestleMania, Marcus. It's not like they have this long block of space on the network to fill.
Oh, man. The pre-show doesn't start until, like, 5 p.m. Eastern. Yeah. Just...
This show's going past midnight. I'm already calling it.
Don't say that, Nate. I'm going to be there.
Your man Jason Agnew's going to be mad. Like, damn it, I gotta wait till 1 in the morning to do the show.
Yeah, I don't blame him. It's just... why not make Mania two nights?
Like the Democratic debate?
If Russell Kingdom can do it this year, why not make Mania two nights?
Just have Gabe Sapolsky, WrestleMania
night one. Night one. Seth Rollins, Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. I mean, listen, even if it's like, even if you do one night at an arena and the second night in a stadium,
mm-hmm.
if you're scared about, you know, selling out both. But I do think if the ticket was priced accordingly, that there are enough wrestling fans in town that they could at least fill up a stadium, or fill up enough of a stadium where it's not going to be
They're doing that pretty much now with the Raws on these big events when they got four nights in a row, NXT,
I don't know if those are selling like they would expect them to sell, especially like a Phoenix where it's hard to get someone to stick around for.
I mean, New York's a little bit different than Phoenix, though. Like, I think they could fill out those arenas in New York.
Oh yeah, I think they will definitely. Raw and SmackDown, I think, will both be sold out after Mania, and I think you can do that probably once a year. I don't think you can do that after all four majors, but especially in New York, I think they'll have no problem selling that out. So.
So what did you make? We talked about the women's chamber. What did you make of the men's chamber and Vince McMahon's salute to Black History Month?
Man, you know, it's sad that this is probably the best week of Kofi's singles career. Yeah. And ultimately, in the end, he was pinned twice for it. Like he has no true victory.
Yeah, he worked. This match went 37 minutes, and then he went 60 minutes on Raw. So best 97 minutes of Kobe's WWE career, and he got pinned twice.
Got pinned twice, and I know he pinned Bryan and other guys in the Gauntlet match, but ultimately he lost that match, and he lost on Sunday. And I guess the question becomes, where do you go now with Kofi?
I mean, they gave him a lot of time with him and Bryan one-on-one.
They did, and I felt like that was the Mustafa Ali spot. That would have been his spot.
So, I think they can, like, I think he has enough momentum where they can do it again at Fastlane, a one-on-one. After that, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see Kofi versus Ali for number one contender.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I think It's funny because Kofi is probably, I don't know, I'm not looking it up right now, but he's probably around our age, I would imagine, maybe even older.
Hold on, we are two separate ages, sir.
I mean, you're in the same category, sir. I mean,
I'm going to say Kofi is closer to my age than your age. Oh, he's somewhere in the middle. He's 37.
Kofi's 37? Okay, so yep. A little older than you, a little younger than me.
Yep.
Yeah, cause don't try to wheezy your way out of this, Marcus. I mean, you got your little chain on, but nah, you can't hang with these millennials.
35, baby. If
we were rebooting a different world, I might be Colonel Taylor, but you'd be Sinbad. Like, you're not Dwayne Wayne.
Oh, damn.
You like the hip RA right now in the dorm.
No, I would be what was your name? The RA that was a little older than everyone else.
Jaleesa?
I'd be Jaleesa.
Don Lewis? Yeah, she just divorced her husband and now she's going back to school.
I went back to school, yes. but yeah, Kofi's 37. Sneaky old.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah, he's not old in life, but in wrestling, he's getting up there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a shame that it's taken them this long to kind of actually do something with the guy. Like, the last time I remember him having this much focus, other than the New Day stuff, which is kind of
Randy
a separate
Orton match, right?
Yeah, it would have been that Orton match like 2009, 2010, somewhere around that.
It might have been the last time Raw was at Madison Square Garden, actually.
Mm. Yeah, that so you're talking spot, yeah. a good close to 10 years.
Yeah.
Since he's been a relevant kind of top of the card guy. So I think they can do one more. And depending on how the reaction is, maybe they can stretch it to WrestleMania. But even if he only gets one match, you know, one pay-per-view main event out of this, you know, it's like a, what do you call it? Like a gold watch for Kofi for all of his service.
So I was watching John and Way last night, and someone raised a question about Kofi maybe becoming the first black champion. And I think Way and John were both confused, and they said, well, wouldn't The Rock qualify? And I wrote back in the chat, I was like, it's complicated with The Rock.
Yes,
if knowing that, let's not count The Rock for a second, knowing that it's been this long since we've had a black world champion.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. Like, it's a complicated discussion all the way around because, A, The Rock is kind of a separate discussion. Mm-hmm. But, B, we've had black world champions before, but never black WWF/WWE champions. But then I think it gets even more complicated now that if Kofi were to win, yeah, it'd be a big deal. But the WWE championship is not even the top title anymore, at least in the way they present them.
Yeah, it's 1B. It's
more, yeah.
Yeah. Which is silly. They just need one title.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I think when you talk about The Rock, hey, Ricochet's back.
No, it's Leo.
Yeah, but Ricochet's fighting Leo.
Oh, he is? Oh, here we go.
Live commentary. I would turn the camera on my laptop around so you could see the TV, but then we'd probably get sued.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got Ricochet and Finn.
What is black on black crime? What's going on? See, that's the problem.
Last night, Finn just beat Lashley and Leo by himself.
Yeah, so now he needs help.
So yeah, now I need help from this other black guy.
What would you call this tag team? You have Rick O'Shea, an actual Irishman, mm-hmm. and Finn Balor.
Black Irish?
Is there a name of a drink that's black?
Yeah, I think I mean, there's an Irish car bomb, but that's got negative connotations. You could. What was the movie where Eddie Griffin found out he was Irish? This is like
I know you're talking about, but I don't know the name of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up. You can talk about Kofi some more for a second.
Yeah, so I think if you're going to pull the trigger on a black world champion, I think I would have Big E
Irish
over.
Jam.
Irish Jam?
Irish Jam, starring Eddie Griffin.
That sounds terrible.
The plot centered on an African-American who wins an Irish public house in a raffle and then has to save the village from the clutches of an evil landlord.
Wow, that sounds bad.
Despite the film being set in Ireland, it was not filmed there, and none of the actors in the cast were Irish. They were English.
Oh, my God.
Irish jam. So, Kofi Kingston.
Yes. I would take Big E over Kofi if we're going to go that route.
I mean, long-term, Big E is the one with the most potential.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could see them doing another pay-per-view with Kofi. If he gets hot enough, I can maybe even see them doing, like, a transitional champion thing with Kofi. But, yeah, then the question is, like, it's a great accomplishment, but I don't know. I don't know. It would feel like almost like, we gave you this moment, black people, but you'll never have a black universal champion. How about that? You keep moving the goalposts, Ms. McMahon.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm happy for Kofi.
Yeah.
I'm glad the fans actually appreciate his effort and what he did.
And it seems like, from everything that I've seen on social media, like, the locker room is really behind him.
The tweets that came out last night were pretty cool. Because you usually don't see that. I mean, people have great matches all the time, and you don't see the talent usually comment about it, especially when you're...
a break character, especially.
Quote-unquote heel. You break character like the Revival did.
Yeah.
So that was... I mean, that I think that speaks a lot to Kofi Kingston, the man, and Kofi Kingston in that locker room and what people think of him. And I think it probably speaks to a bigger point of there are a lot of Kofi Kingstons in that locker room that probably feel underappreciated in terms of what they can do and haven't had opportunities to sort of be put on that stage. So yeah. I think that's where a lot of it's coming to from as well. So it was good to see that.
Yeah. So overall, I think it was a good night from what I saw. Like I said, I probably saw maybe 60 to 70% of the show.
We should talk on the women's angle real quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was going to wrap it up with that. But yeah, 60 to 70% of it. And what I saw was mostly good. I even liked the Shane McMahon match, which I didn't know if I was going to like. Shane and Miz versus the Usos was a good little tag match. And then you had the angle, like you said, with Ronda Rousey taking on Ruby Riott. And then we have the Becky-Charlotte interaction going on with that. What'd you make of that?
I mean, it telegraphs that we're getting a three-way, which is fine.
Yeah. Which I think most, after Vince put Charlotte in, I think that's where most people assumed we were going.
Yeah, and, you know, the 5% of wrestling fans that are upset, well, they'll get over it. They're still going to watch Mania, so
yeah,
despite
I mean,
what they say.
The thing is, Charlotte makes it a better match.
I know.
And a better story.
Yeah.
Because she can do things as a heel that Ronda Rousey can't do yet as a character.
Yeah, and I think, you know, listen, Becky's great. I get all that, but she's not Steve Austin, guys. And I think having a Flair along with a Ronda Rousey only helps Becky when it comes to getting people outside of the wrestling bubble to care about this match. So
yeah.
Ultimately,
when Becky
this is all good for Becky Lynch. And listen, I'm sure if you ask Becky personally, she would love to have her best friend in that match along with Ronda Rousey. Like, so, but that's just wrestling fans.
But Marcus, they're not friends, right? They don't hang out all the time, right?
Yeah, sure. I thought the shots were pretty stiff.
Yeah.
I'm assuming
so
they
anybody
both said,
that was talking shit about Nia Jax, I don't want to hear it now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they both said lay it on, but there was some blood, some damage out of that. Triple H sort of talked about it from on the top of the show, where he even acknowledged that it was pretty badass to see Becky Lynch do that. But he said, you know, next time she does that, she'll be arrested. So,
ooh, maybe we get a split personality Triple H from now on, where it's like the Incredible Hulk and Bruce Banner, where you got like evil WWE authority Triple H, but you got good NXT Triple H trying to fight his way out.
I saw someone saying, oh, so Triple H is a babyface again. But I think he established at the end of last week's show that he was the babyface. I mean,
he asked for
an apology. He got the apology, and he said, all right, you're off to WrestleMania. I don't think he was colluding with Vince McMahon, so I think he's maintaining his...
I think the thing is, though, if we could prove collusion between Vince, Stephanie, and Triple H, they didn't want to do that because then they would have had to pay Becky $60 to $80 million.
What a segue for the next segment.
Hey, we're professionals here, folks.
We are. I think this is... the thing I don't know, and this is probably a good thing we don't know this, is how do you get out of the suspension? Is it a match? You win and you're in the match? Or, I mean, she's not going to do the 60 days.
Maybe Vince puts Nia in her way, and that's how we also kind of wrap up the Nia-Becky stuff.
That's a good idea.
If you can beat Nia Jax, then you're in the match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then she beats Nia, and then we got the three-way at Mania.
That's not bad.
Which is going to be, like, I think, and that's the other thing, like, the people that are complaining about this, they're missing the point that we're having a women's match, main event, WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
And if you're adding an additional woman, that's even better.
Yeah.
That's now three women you're spotlighting instead of two.
Yeah. And if you're going by the storyline of the whole women's revolution, evolution, whatever they want to call it, Charlotte should be there because she was one of the building blocks for it. So, yeah, I think they stumbled onto something they didn't know they were going to have with Becky. I'm glad they didn't drop it. Her and Rhonda are big-time draws, but I think Charlotte makes the story better, and she'll make the match better, and she'll make the moment Becky wins better.
Yeah, and I do think that this could easily lead to the horsewoman angle coming out of this match, depending on how they want to book it, whether it's Charlotte helping Becky or vice versa, and you know that sort of eliminates Ronda from television, which it sounds like it's going to happen anyways, and then you come back and you sort of build from there. So
yeah, because then the Fox deal starts up in October, which is when I'm sure if Ronda does go away, I'm sure she'll be back by then because they'll want Ronda Rousey on deck for that. And then you could start doing the stuff with the horsewoman leading up to Survivor Series if you want.
Yeah.
Make that main event Survivor Series. So, yeah. Not everything is gloom and doom when it comes to wrestling. So, we got WWE. We got AEW. You going to be heading out there for Double or Nothing?
Yes, I will be.
Okay. Yeah, I figured because Chris is heading out there, the professor. So we'll have at least two of members of the Kings of Sport family out there.
Yes, it sounds like John and Wei aren't going.
No.
So we will hold it down for the post-wrestling family.
Yeah, maybe you could find like an empty table at StarCast and just just throw up a booth real quick.
Friend maybe of the post-wrestling family, Marcus Vandenberg and TNA.
Maybe Conrad will let it slide.
Yeah. I didn't tell you I met Conrad. I didn't tell you about that.
Oh, you did?
I met Conrad at the Rumble.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Very nice guy.
He knew you were?
We follow each other on Twitter, but I don't think he put like two and two together. This was, so we went to the show, him and Bruce, and Andreas Hale of the Corner Podcast. He works for Sporting News, and he was doing a story on Conrad. So after the show, Conrad told him, hey, when you're done, just come into my green room and we can do our interview. So the show wraps up and we know where the green room is, and we're trying to figure out how do we get in the green room without sort of getting harassed by security. And it was there was a stage, and the green room was sort of the door connected to the stage. And the only way to really get up there was to literally jump on the stage. And of course, when we did that, security came over and was like, hey, what are you guys doing?
We got a code black.
Pretty much. But once we got that figured
out. Negro infiltration.
Yes. But yeah, he was a cool guy. He
Bruce is like, sorry about the police brutality. Well, you know.
Well, and Bruce was there too.
Cool.
So yeah,
very cool. And they were nice and hospitable.
Oh yeah, very nice. And I know the Corner podcast is trying to get some type of involvement at StarCast because.
Oh, cool.
I just, one of the complaints last year was the lack of diversity when it came to the podcasts.
Yep.
There wasn't any podcast of color represented.
That's something like Chris and I had talked about, that they were, you know, and it's no shade on Conrad or Bruce and them, but at the same time, if you're making this big event, this all in, so to speak, everybody's included, but it's just a bunch of white guys. Where's the diversity?
Yeah. And I think a lot of that too, it's just like, who's in your circle? And if your circle isn't diverse, then I don't think the final product will be diverse.
Nope.
So I know they're trying to sort of have some type of involvement.
Same thing in general, like and it's not just wrestling, but
It's just life. Yeah.
Yeah. But for the example that we're talking about, we'll just use wrestling. Like most of 90%, I would say, of your major kind of wrestling punditry analysis are white dudes, whether you're talking about Meltzer or Satin or, you know, like I love John Pollock. John Pollock's a white dude that's pretty prominent.
I don't see color of John Pollock.
I mean, John's invited to the cookout. John's got a seat up front.
DJ Jopo is just a human being to me. I do not see color.
If you don't know, then use a mofo.
Yes. J-O-P-O.
But, it's like there are very few people of color and very few women, if you really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, kind of in the bubble. So hopefully, this will be a step towards maybe having some different faces at the table and voices in the conversation.
Yes. So that's in Memorial Day weekend in Vegas, which should be fun.
Yeah.
A sold out show, which is exciting for them.
Yeah, that'll be good. So we'll have to get maybe you and Chris will have to get some time while you're out there, and we'll have to do a live remote from Double or Nothing.
We could do that.
And we'll throw it up on the Patreon. Ha-ha.
Yes. Yeah.
It's long-term booking. I learned that from Conrad. Make the people pay. So, shout-out to Bruce and Conrad, and also the guys at the Corner, and also John Murray, who I saw on MSNBC this weekend talking about the Jussie Smollett situation, which we're not going to talk about this week.
Not this week, but I'm maybe by next week.
I was going to say, I still want to see some things kind of play out before I give my full thoughts on it. But we got thoughts on that, folks.
We have thoughts. we will hold those thoughts until another week.
Yeah. So what we're going to do right now, we're not going to take a break for the people on the Patreon video version of the show. But if you are listening on the classic audio version, we're going to take a break and come back on the other side. Because, Marcus, we have something I've been waiting to talk about for a while, and it's something I think I'm going to name. I'm already making the executive decision. We're going to name the episode this week after this event.
Okay.
Coming up after the break, for those of you listening on the audio version, we're not going into the Marvel Universe, but we are talking about Captain America, The Winter Settlement. So don't go anywhere. We got more Kings of Sport right after the break. Everybody watching on Patreon, keep it locked right here.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? Someone took a big L, I don't know how that felt.
I think your love would be too much, or you'd be left in the dust, unless I stuck by you. You're the sunflower. You're the sunflower.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport. It is time to give you what you want, time to give you what you need. It is segment four, our repository of ratchetness, where we talk about the craziest stories from the week that was in sports and pop culture. But Marcus, this week is not about ratchetness. This week is about redemption. The people watching at home can see the black fist.
During Black History Month, too. Just thought about that.
Yes, during Black History Month, Marcus. So for those that have not heard the latest on Colin Kaepernick, let the people know what went down this past week.
The NFL and Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid settled their collusion lawsuit with a settlement. And this went down on Friday. Because it's a settlement, the terms of the agreement were not announced, but there have been rumors about what this means in terms of Kaepernick and the money. And Mike Freeman said, a number of NFL team officials are speculating to me the NFL paid Kaepernick in the $60 to $80 million range, which is small potatoes for the NFL. But for Kaepernick, I mean, this is obviously... not only is it life-changing money in that sense, but it's probably the money, or at least close to the ballpark of the money he missed out on as not being in the NFL.
Yeah,
and I think that's what it comes down to, is what did this guy miss out on by getting blackballed by the league?
And it's essentially an admission that kind of colluded against this dude.
Yeah, it's an admission, and it's a hey, we don't want this stuff to come out, so let's just
right.
Wrap this up.
To take the court.
Yes, I mean, and I don't think the lead will look great at all if all of this came out. And I think the NFL had, despite a lower than expected Super Bowl, I think the lead had a great year this year. And I think having this Kaepernick information come out would have been two steps backward for them. So when you think of how much money the lead makes, this is really not a huge dent to their big picture cause. So,
no, even if it's like I've seen some of the higher estimates at upwards of 80 million.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's 80 million, like that's a drop in the bucket for the NFL.
Yeah.
It's funny because like I wish it would have gone to court, and I wish maybe instead of getting my life insurance license, I would have got a legal degree. Mm-hmm. And I would have been Cap's lawyer because I would have won a case, Marcus Vandenberg, in 5 minutes. I would have just had, Your Honor, I got five exhibits to present. Exhibit A, the Peter Man. Exhibit B, Mark Sanchez. Exhibit C, Blaine Gabbert. Exhibit D, who's the black quarterback the Redskins signed that hadn't played
Josh,
in 2 years?
Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson and Exhibit A, B, C, D, E. Exhibit E is... Who else? Who was terrible? They got a check this year.
Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles, yes. Blake Bortles would have been an example. Like, you would have just had to show these terrible, terrible NFL quarterbacks that got paid. And it's like, yeah, there's no reason other than the fact that he's making some of these owners and maybe a percentage of the fans uncomfortable that Colin Kaepernick was not on the roster the past two seasons.
Yeah. And that leads us to the obvious question, What happens now with Kaepernick? And now that this is behind him, now that the lead has settled with him, and now that we see Eric Reid, not only back in the lead, but Eric Reid just signed a new
three-year
deal
contract. Yep.
With the Panthers, do you expect Kaepernick now to get an offer from a team in the NFL next season?
He should. You know, even like, let's say, even if Cap is diminished, he's still a quality backup, I think, for a team.
Mm-hmm.
So he should get an offer. Will he? I don't know. Like, I don't know if this settlement means, yes, Cap, we welcome you back, or, all right, Cap, you proved your point, now go away. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I could see, you know, three or four teams that would be made better automatically off the bat by signing Colin Kaepernick, not the least of which would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Buffalo Bills could use Colin Kaepernick. The Ravens could have Cap as a backup for your man Lamar Jackson. You know, yeah. Have a veteran on the roster. Like, there's at least a handful of teams, I think, that could use Colin Kaepernick's services. I think it's got to be the right market, though, because you don't want, and not to disparage the good people of Texas, but I don't think you want to sign him as Dak Prescott's backup in Dallas, because I think you might get some pushback from the fan base.
Yeah.
But I do think there are markets that would be more than willing to accept Colin Kaepernick.
Mark Gerardos, busy attorney who is representing Kaepernick, was on CNN over the weekend, and he tossed out two teams that he thinks Kaepernick could end up on. One was the Panthers, which we mentioned Eric Reed. Would not surprise me, I guess, in that sense. And the other he mentioned was Bob Kraft and the Patriots.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bob Kraft, if you're really about that life, you're out here talking with Meek Mill and you're wearing a chain. Sign Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
That's going to be an angry phone call from Donald Trump.
That last one. I don't see it, to be honest, Mark Gerardos.
I'm not going to go as far as to say that would make me a Patriots fan, Marcus, because it wouldn't. But it might make me a Bob Kraft fan.
Ooh.
He's still not invited to the barbecue, but I might have to fix him a plate.
And wrap it in foil.
Yeah, wrap it in foil.
To go.
Take it to go, but you know, this is a sign of appreciation for signing Kaepernick.
Ooh, what would Brady think about that? Though I feel like Brady was never publicly anti-Kaepernick.
No. He was just publicly pro-Trump.
Politically, they might align a little differently. But
would be great. That would be great. Just Tom Brady, I never knew black people felt this way until I talked to Colin. I don't know why I made Tom Brady a Southerner.
Yeah, he's not.
Where is he from? Michigan?
Northern California.
Oh, that's right. He went to school in Michigan. Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude, I never knew about the struggles of black people, man.
Is he Matt Riddle now? He's not Matt Riddle.
I was going to say he's Matt Riddle, Keanu Reeves from The Matrix. Like, whoa. But yeah, man, I like the idea of the Panthers, though, for a couple reasons. One, like you said, there's already a built-in connection with Eric Reed. Two, I love Cam Newton, but he's can
damaged.
Yeah, he's taking a lot of punishment, so I think having a sturdy backup would be good. And as much as I respect Taylor Heineke, you know, he's from this area with the Old Dominion University. Taylor Heineke might not be the guy to, if you're a team in contention, which the Panthers might be next year, Taylor Heineke's not the guy to pin your hopes on if Cam goes down. So why not have a guy who's taking the team to a Super Bowl and an NFC Championship game? Who's still fairly, relatively young.
He's 31.
Yeah.
I am reading a story from...
And he's 31 without 2 years of football damage. Like, he has been up for 2 years.
Manish Mahat from Daily News, New York Daily News, wrote a story with a headline, No way Colin Kaepernick is talented enough to lead an NFL team. And his his argument for this is based on Kaepernick's last two seasons in the NFL, which were not great. I would say they were pretty bad, to be honest. And he runs through a bunch of stats, including his quarterback rating the last two seasons, which was 52, which was 30th out of 32 quarterbacks. His QBR inside the pocket, whatever that means, was 39.8 in that two-year window, which is dead last on that 32 quarterback list. He cites that Kaepernick was the only starting quarterback to have a lower than 60% completion percentage, while averaging fewer than 7 yards per attempt during those two seasons. He obviously stated that his record over that stretch, over the last three seasons, he was 11-25 as a starter. You know, part of that was the team around him.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things, because the headline is Colin Kaepernick can't lead a team. What lead a team to what is the question?
Well,
because if you're talking Super Bowl, maybe he's not the guy. But if you're just talking about being a starting quarterback, we already said, man, Nathan Peterman, the starting quarterback in this league. Blaine Gabbert, starting quarterback in this league. You telling me Eli Manning? Like, I know Eli Manning is a hero to New Yorkers for those two Super Bowls. Eli Manning has been terrible the last two seasons.
Well, here's the point. Here's this at the very end. And to be fair, you know, writers don't write the headlines, so you should know that for people who are ripping this guy. He writes, is he talented enough to be a 31-year-old backup at this point? Probably. That's the ceiling, though. This guy isn't rescuing the Patriots, Panthers, or anyone else. Suggesting otherwise is laughable. I think... Manesh Mahata. I can't pronounce his name. He covers the Jets. I should know this last
I liked it better when he was Mahat, because I was going to say, that's a Mahat take.
No. I get his point of saying, do you expect Kaepernick to come in and save your franchise? No, I don't. I do believe he can be a backup.
Yeah, absolutely.
But listen, I would, if you're, let's say, the Jaguars, and you were signing Kaepernick to take over for Bortles, and you were expecting him to lead your team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you got to factor in. I think he made some fair points about not only Cap as a starter, but you have to factor in that he hasn't snapped a ball in over 2 years, and I think there's going to be some rust there.
Yeah,
and,
definitely will.
So I do think that you should lower the expectations, but this column feels a little unfair knowing that he has no offers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, all right, no one's saying he's going to sign with the Patriots, let alone start with the Patriots. So this just feels like it's a little mean-spirited to go after him for something he has no control over at the moment.
You talked about your Jets, Marcus. If they sign Colin Kaepernick as a backup and maybe spot starter if somebody gets hurt, like, I think the Jets could do a lot worse than having Colin Kaepernick on the roster.
Well, I think we're going to hear the D word a lot when it comes to Kaepernick. And that would be distraction.
I was going to say, what, dynamic?
No.
Durable?
No.
And dependable?
I think the Jets fan base has been through this once with Tim Tebow. I don't know if they want to sign up for a second round with Colin Kaepernick.
Well, and then the other thing, going back to that article, which I think, like, there's a fair argument, like, what is Colin Kaepernick at 31?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a fair discussion. But to try to paint him as this guy was the worst quarterback in the league the last 3 years, when you take into account that San Francisco 49ers roster, which didn't have a lot of talent in the skill positions, when you take into account the way that they played, you know, this wasn't a vertical passing offense. This was a dink and dunk offense. So he's not going to be putting up those big time numbers. One thing, though, that I remember from those last few seasons with Kaepernick is, even when he wasn't great, he wasn't somebody that was turning over the ball, which is the biggest killer in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't matter how good you are in the pocket, if your touchdown to interception ratio is bad, you're not going to win any ball games. So I think Colin Kaepernick is somebody that if you're a team in transition, or if you're a team that has a starter that needs to be pushed, like Jacksonville with Blake Bortles, to me, the biggest mistake they made was not bringing in a veteran that could push him. If you're a team in that situation, I think you could do worse than Colin Kaepernick.
To that point, though, I think, yes, he wasn't throwing interceptions, but at the same time, he was not accurate. And the Chiefs stat, I'm looking at his numbers now from 2016, where he started 11 games for the 49ers. The Niners went 1-10. He was only averaging less than 200 yards a game passing, which in today's modern NFL wouldn't cut it.
Yeah.
You mentioned the interceptions. He only had 4. So he had a 16-4 touchdown to interception ratio. He completed 59.2% of his passes for 2,241 yards and 11 games started. So,
I mean, that's not great by any stretch, but I don't think it's terrible. Like, Blake Bortles got a contract renewal, and I hate to keep going back to Blake Bortles because I'm sure he's a nice man, but Blake Bortles got a contract renewal, and he might be one of the worst playoff quarterbacks we've ever seen.
No,
Tyrod Taylor. They threw Tyrod Taylor to the curb because they believed in Nathan Peterman.
Yeah. Let's see. Trying to compare him to
Mark Sanchez, still out here getting checks.
Let's look at Nick Mullins. Nick Mullins was
Marcus Vandenberg. Brock Osweiler is still out here eating good.
But you're naming all bad backups. Like, you're not naming anyone who's good. So if you think Colin Kaepernick can be a bad backup quarterback, then I agree with you. But do you think he's going to be I don't expect him to be an amazing starting quarterback. I don't think he was ever outside of one season.
I think his ceiling is he's a dependable backup who can be a spot starter if your top guy gets injured.
Yeah, but I think there's a large percentage of Kaepernick supporters that have not come to terms with that for his career. I think there's a large percentage that are expecting him to be something he's not, and something he's never been outside of that rookie year.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets a little dangerous, because people are going to now somehow expect him to come in and start for a top team, which was never the case.
No, honestly, the only team with playoff aspirations that I could even make an argument for him starting for would be Jacksonville. And that's only because Blaine Gabbert is so bad.
Well, funny you mentioned Gabbert, because Gabbert was the one who replaced Kaepernick in San Francisco. When Cap got benched, Gabbert took over.
Yep.
So, Bortles this year was 3-9 as a starter. His completion was 60.3%, so just barely above Cap. 13 touchdowns, 11 interceptions.
Oof.
Only 209 passing yards a game. His QBR was 44, which wasn't even the lowest of his career. That was his rookie year. Bortles is not very good.
Yeah, at least if I were your man Tom Coughlin, and we talked about it last year, Marcus, I would have brought in Teddy Bridgewater just to push him. Like, I think he needed somebody in camp to push him, if not take over the job. You know, I thought he had too much of a sense of security. Like, who was their backup last year in Jacksonville?
Was it Kessler? No, Kessler was it was Kessler.
Like, you're not threatened by Cody Kessler. But if you bring in a Teddy Bridgewater or a Colin Kaepernick, like, there's at least a threat of, I could theoretically lose my job to this guy.
To be fair to Bortles,
coming into this. We're not being fair to Blake Bortles on this show.
Coming into this season, Jacksonville is coming off their best year in ages.
Yeah.
And to be fair, his playoff performance wasn't terrible. He didn't throw any picks.
No,
he won two games.
But I still would have pushed him coming into camp.
Oh, yeah, I would have pushed him. But I understand why he had the job, why he ended up winning the job based on last season. The three seasons before that, he was bad. The team was bad. But considering he was halfway decent in 2017 and he was getting back all this talent at receiver that were out from injuries, I think, yeah, people expected a lot better from Jacksonville, and we saw how they ended up. So,
I think you're right. I think both sides, both extremes, like whether you're a super cap stan who thinks he's going to step back in and become that quarterback again that led a team to two consecutive NFC championship games, he's not that guy anymore. But if you're also on the other side of the fence and you're like, Cap barely deserves a job in the league, if that, either side is off base.
Yeah. I almost don't want to see him come back just because if he does come back and he's not Tom Brady, then that's going to be a whole other conversation that needs to be had. And I don't have the energy to sort of deal with that, especially on social media.
No, but I really like Charlotte. I really like Charlotte. I think Charlotte, it's either got to be Charlotte. Well, Charlotte's kind of a black city. I think the blacker the city, the better the road to hoe for Cap.
Yeah.
It's got to be a black city or a team with a black quarterback who respects Cap. Like, hell, maybe like Kansas City. Maybe they could get that light-skinned fraternity going with him and your man Showtime.
Seattle would be safe.
Seattle would be safe with your man light-skinned Russ. I'm assuming they have light-skinned quarterback meetings every Wednesday in the league.
Probably.
It's just Russ and Cap.
Hey, you know what? I bet you those meetings start on time, though.
On the other side of town, Lamar Jackson's like 30 minutes late.
Mm-hmm.
Cam's just showing up in his Easter suit, and it's not even Easter. what's his name? Your boy out in Texas.
Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson. He's the only one that showed up on time in the dark skin meeting. he's just mad. Your man Kaiser doesn't know which meeting to go to.
Yeah, he's going to the unemployed meeting probably soon.
Is he still in the league?
Good question.
Let's Kaiser. See.
He was terrible, man.
Yo, RG3 is still in the league.
Packers.
RG3 is still in the league. I'm actually happy for him, man. Like, you know what? Get them checks, Robert.
Yeah. Kaiser's a backup for Rodgers.
Cornball brothers need checks, too. So that's Colin Kaepernick. Real quick, Marcus, before we get out of here this week, we need to talk about All-Star Weekend. How much of All-Star Weekend did you watch?
Too much.
Too much? I mean, it was fine. It was what it was. It's always a big celebration. But there were two moments that I think we need to talk about. Number one, kind of coming off of our last discussion, there was a moment on All-Star Saturday night where Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny Smith engaged in a papa shot contest. And
Kenny,
Shaquille O'Neal said, "Kenny, I'm going to beat you because they call me the Black Steph Curry." Marcus Vandenberg, as a light-skinned man yourself, what did you think of Shaquille O'Neal's attempted humor there?
Oh, I knew what he was about to do. I knew where this was going. I was not expecting Kenny Smith to indirectly pile on by asking Shaq, "Hey, Shaq, you know Steph Curry's black, right?"
I think Kenny Smith kind of bailed Shaq out a little bit, Marcus. Because if we just left that hanging with no response, I think people would have complained. But I think because Kenny actually addressed it, then maybe there was a little bit less reason for people to be outraged by Shaq's stupid joke.
And the punchline of the joke was, basically Steph isn't black, he's light skinned.
Yes. He's like he's not black, Kenny, he's light skinned.
Yeah.
I think that made it better than actually if Shaq had just left it with the first part of the joke hanging.
Yeah. But I mean if let's say you're not the target demographic for the NBA and you're watching All Star Weekend and
yes,
that joke goes right over your head, right? They don't use like well, I don't get it.
Got me. I was like, that's not a joke you make in general
no,
public.
No, it's not at all.
That's our joke. You don't bring yes. that out to the public.
Yes.
Not when you got Post Malone and
yeah.
What's the girl? The girl that married Justin Bieber. Haley, is it Haley? Used to be Haley Baldwin. Now she's Haley Bieber. You don't make that joke with Haley Bieber in the audience.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the biggest thing, Marcus, that brought up that made my black pop culture spidey senses tingle. It was your man Jason Collins.
John Collins,
I'm sorry. During the dunk contest. This Negro brought out for those that haven't seen it, you got to go on YouTube and check out John Collins' 2019 dunk contest. He brings out like six dudes dressed up like the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yep.
He's like the old brother. I almost thought I heard him coming out here singing Negro spirituals. Like,
And bomber jackets. And
had the bomber jackets and everything.
Yeah.
And then, since we are in North Carolina, Charlotte, next to Kitty Hawk, home of the Wright brothers, he brings out a paper model of the Wright brothers' plane.
Yes. A pretty big model, I should say.
I mean, it's a big model, but it's not like, say, a Kia.
It's not a car, no.
It's not a car or a person.
No.
And my man, John Collins, makes a big show of it. He puts on the goggles, which he has to take off ultimately because yep. he can't see.
Puts on the scarf, puts on the hat.
Puts on the hat and runs through the Tuskegee Airmen, jumps over the paper plane, and ends up clipping it.
Yeah.
This is a professional athlete, Marcus Vandenberg, an NBA player, and a pretty good, like, for a young dude, he's a pretty good player.
He's a very good player, yeah.
Clips the paper airplane and then finishes the dunk. But, yeah, it was and I think Kenny Smith had the line. He was like, well, we are still in Black History Month, folks. What did you make of that foolishness, Marcus?
I think he gets an A for creativity and a D minus for execution.
Yo, when I saw what the dunk was going to be, I was like, all he's doing is jumping over a paper plane.
Yeah, I mean, people have done worse, but the fact that he damaged the plane was just...
That he damaged the plane and damaged the civil rights movement. With his dunk.
As someone pointed out on Twitter, this man literally works in the same building as Dominique Wilkins, and he could not figure out a better dunk than this.
Oh, yeah, he should have got Dominique or Spud, some of the old legends.
Yeah.
But no, you had to get cute with your little Black History Month tribute.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, Marcus, and I don't want to offend nobody. We in mixed company, but... If I'm an NBA player with the ability to dunk on a what's the regulation now? 10 feet.
10 feet.
If I have the ability to dunk on a 10-foot regulation rim, and I want to honor Black History Month, what I'm going to do, I think, is I'm going to get a bus, and like a replica bus, like an actual bus that people can sit in,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to have an old lady portraying Rosa Parks, and she wants to sit in the front. But they make her go to the back. Then I'm going to dunk over the bus, open the doors, and bring Rosa to the front seat. And that's going to be how the dunk ends. That's a 50-point dunk right there.
You doing this in front of Mitt's company?
I mean, if you're going to go through the trouble of using the civil rights movement to gain points. And I think he only got like a 35-40 anyway for that dunk.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're going to go through it, go the whole way. Like, maybe have, I'm trying to think, maybe get that Martin Luther King impersonator we were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
Have him come out for the dunk. What did you make of the weekend as a whole? Because we had the All-Star game Sunday night. Your man Anthony Hamilton killed the national anthem. He made up for Fergie last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had J. Cole.
Yeah.
Did the halftime show. And then we had a game with no defense until the last 5 minutes.
I mean, it's the dunk contest slash star power at this point. The three-point contest has now turned into the premier event, so that should be going on last.
The three-point contest is really good. I could have used maybe two or three less competitors, though.
I think
need 10 dudes.
Hmm.
I don't want to hate on your boy, Seth Curry, but I think he was just put in because they were in their hometown.
He's also like number two or whatever in 3-point percentage. I mean, he's pretty high up there this season.
Yeah, but your boy, who's your boy from the Nets?
Well, look at Joe Harris. Joe Harris won, and you would probably say he doesn't belong.
I mean, he's a proud graduate of the University of Virginia.
Yeah, he is a UVA guy. Yeah,
Joe Harris. That was actually exciting. Yeah, you're right. They could have gone last because I would have sworn Steph Curry was going to come out and win that thing.
Man, he started off. In his last round, he started off, I think he missed the first 10.
I was going to say he hit 9 or 10 in a row before his first miss. And then he just couldn't get back in rhythm.
Yeah.
And even then, like he finished with like, what, 20, 24, something like
24,
that?
24, 25. I would and like Harris to see more finalists, actually. Because he only had three. It was Harris, Steph Curry, and I forgot the third who advanced.
Was it Booker?
No, it wasn't Booker. I'm drawing a blank. But it felt like the finals were.
It was, I think it was your man from OKC, was it?
I'm too lazy to look. But maybe we're at the point now, if it's going to be the marquee event, you do two final rounds where you do a round, give them some time to recover, and then you do a second final.
Yeah, especially if you're not going to have any stars in the dunk contest.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, these are names that the average basketball fan aren't going to recognize.
Because the last really great dunk contest we had, even though it didn't have stars, was the one with LaVine and Gordon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was nothing like that on this one.
No.
Like, even the dunk that was the best dunk of the night where Diallo dunked on Shaq.
Yeah, that was
a really good dunk. It wasn't, like, it wouldn't have even been the third best dunk that year with LaVine and Gordon.
Well, that might have been the best year ever.
Yeah. But, I mean, to be fair, though, neither one of them had any civil rights iconography in their dunk, so.
That is true.
Oh, maybe that's what we'll get. Like, every year we'll have, like, five really good dunkers. Then we'll have one dude that's just out there to incorporate Black History Month into his dunk so we can have, like, a teachable moment on the court. Like, he's not going to win, but, like, we'll have, like, maybe the march to in Selma.
Again, Mid's company.
Like, we'll just have, like, a bunch of black people marching, and then all of a sudden, like, they lift the guy up and he dunks.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could have, who else could we have? We could have, Madam C.J. Walker. We could have, like, the player getting his hair done by Madam C.J. Walker, and then he ends up dunking out of the barber's chair.
If this were the Bodega Boys, we'd be playing the problematic light right now, because these are all problematic ideas that you have about.
I'm trying to educate the people, Marcus. I'm trying to, you know, bring black history alive on the court.
Sure.
Like, who did he run that by? Because, you know, he had to tell more than one person because he had to hire all those Tuskegee Airmen.
Trey Young. I'm sure Trey Young signed off on it.
Like, Trey, what do you think? Man, that's a good idea. And that skills challenge was pretty good, too.
Jason Tatum going half court.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trey Young got his revenge on Luka Doncic.
Yeah, well. too soon for Hawks fans.
But yeah, so that's what we took away from the NBA this year. The three-point contest needs to be the final event. The All-Star game is still just a glorified pickup game.
Yeah.
Well, pickup games have more defense than the All-Star game. And yeah. We need more Black History Month involved in the dunk contest.
And then the rookie game is whatever.
I didn't even watch the rookie game this year.
Yeah, that's even worse than the All-Star game.
The rookie, like, I think I watched more of the quote-unquote celebrity game than the rookie game.
I would like to see, like, a G League All-Star versus a All-Star rookie sophomore.
That'd actually be pretty cool.
Because I think that would naturally get those guys to play hard.
That would actually be pretty good.
And it would bring good exposure for the Nets crop of guys who...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now that we see, Chris Middleton was the first guy to play in the G League and to make an NBA All-Star team.
Yeah.
Middleton.
Was Middleton one of the final three for the three-point contest?
Might have been. No, he was not. He was not. He flamed out early. so, it's still better than the Pro Bowl. It's still better than NHL. Yeah. It's still better than baseball. Though I feel like the Home Run Derby has now surpassed, for sure, the dunk contest.
Yeah.
Because at least baseball, for all of its flaws, at least baseball still attracts star power to that derby.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, okay. Maybe that's what... Okay. So we get LeBron James, right? Dress him up like Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you bring out, like, Kyle Korver, Deli, Kevin Love, and dress him up like his angry white supremacist. And you have Frederick Douglass dunking on the white supremacist. That's a 50.
You can find me on social media at Marco Will. MarcoWill.
You can find me on social media enlightening people for the rest of Black History Month, unlike Marcus. People call me the Black Marcus Vandenberg. you can find me on social media at N8, MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Check out the show, The Kings of Sport, at Cospod on Twitter, KOS_POD. Check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Kings of Sport. Check out the show. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Podcast Addict. Wherever you get your podcast from, we are sure to be there. Subscribe, rate, review, and most importantly, if you like what we're doing, if you think your friends need this type of sports and pop culture talk in their life, share the show with your friends. And the Patreon. Make sure if you're listening to the classic version of this and you want to see the pictures that go along with this, you can see the exasperated look on Marcus's face when I bring up all these civil rights dunk strategies. Check out the Patreon where you can sign up. And real quick, I'm gonna read our patrons, Marcus.
Okay. So
go ahead and talk to the people a little bit more while I bring up our current list of patrons.
Yes. We will have a show next week. I will be traveling, so we will figure out when exactly we will be recording, but I will be in Orlando. Hold your jokes. I'm there for work, at least part of the time.
Working on Disney.
no, come on. And I'm actually there for 10 days. So I'm actually looking forward to, obviously, Florida, but the weather, Nate. It's been pretty miserable in L.A. for L.A. standards.
I heard it's been raining out there a lot lately.
It's been raining a whole lot, and it's been cold. I mean, at the moment, it is only, let's say, it's 46 degrees where I live, which for us is pretty cold, considering it's only 6:45 at night. But I'm looking forward to thawing out some in sunny Florida.
Mm. Okay, so... yeah, Marcus will be on the road. We'll kind of figure things out. We've still got for our patrons. We're trying to schedule T.J. McClune coming up so we can hear about his trials and tribulations running two wrestling shows during Super Bowl week. We'll figure that out with T.J. There's also a few new episodes of the 20 Twin Twin, which is Chris from L.A.'s political podcast. The most recent one, he talked about Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. So those are up now in the Patreon feed. And again, shout out to our patrons. We got Amy Lamont, Fize Iqbal, Jermaine Jones, who was in Marcus's neck of the woods this past week. We'll have to hear from Jermaine. Like, one of these days, we need to talk to Jermaine and find out about his experience in the Magic Kingdom.
Yes.
I'm surprised he didn't reach out to you and get the insider tips.
No, he did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did. That's all I knew he was doing.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, you could do the tourist things, but if you really want to have the VIP Disney experience, you got to talk to Marcus Vandenberg. John Pollock and Wei Ting from Post Wrestling are patrons. John Taylor, the Professor, Christopher Marquis Ely, Paul Fernley, Peter Erickson, Randy, Rory Alwick, Scott Criscolo, Steve Willie, and Todd Elliott. Thank you for your patronage.
Thank you, guys. And Dallas.
Yes. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. We'll be back sometime next week. We don't know yet, but when the show pops up, you'll know we're there. How yes. about that? That's why you subscribe on iTunes, and that's why you subscribe to the Patreon if you want this hot video content.
Maybe we will talk some baseball.
Interesting. Do you think your boys will be signed by then? Harper and Machado?
I think one of the two will be.
Okay. I said they'll both still be unsigned.
Oh, man. Why do you hate me, Nate?
I want you to do some work when you're down in Florida, Mark.
I no. We've had all offseason to do this work, and this is now dragging out to the point where...
Say hi to your boy, Mr. Belding, if he's down there for us.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the King's Sport. We'll be back next time with an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. So let me run this by you, Marcus. We get Candace Park in the dunk contest, and it's in L.A. So she comes through that secret passageway, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a tribute to Harriet Tubman. Like, she's going through the Underground Railroad for the dunk. Think that'll work. We'll see you next time, because you've been down with the King.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna leave it all on the mat, 'cause that's what I do when I get it done, so I can do it. Yeah!